Well, a billion here and a billion there, and pretty soon you're talking real money. Our government is now handing out somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 billion a year of our real money to keep the nation's agriculture viable. As we look to the 2007 Farm Bill, we pause to ask which of the nation's farmers should get our real money.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 531st edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends way over there in the little village of Paphos who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phones. Hello, Carol.
Hello.
Folks, every 5 years, our government passes a new farm bill with the intent of keeping our agriculture viable and healthy in a rapidly changing world. There are a lot of real money. There is a lot of real money involved in this farm bill, somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 billion a year. And that real money is our money, yours and mine. And so today we ask, who should get our real money that is being doled out in that 2007 Farm Bill, which is now being looked at in Washington, D.C.? Here to help us figure out this question today, we have Tom Bias, who's the president of the National Farmers Union. Tom, welcome to the Food Chain.
Oh, thanks, Michael. It's great to be on.
Yeah, and where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
D.C., good, okay. There are a lot of farmers there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I'm originally from Indiana. That's where I farm.
You know, it was really amazing the first time I went to Washington, D.C. and saw the Department of Agriculture. One big building.
It is a big building. And, to keep in perspective, back in Abraham Lincoln's time when they created the Department of Agriculture, I think they started it with about 10 people.
10 people?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot more than that now, right?
It is.
Okay, tell us quickly a little bit about the National Farmers Union. I mean, you're all over the world, aren't you?
We were founded in 1902, Michael,
mm-hmm.
And basically it was around the turn of the century when farmers were in an economic situation where they weren't getting a decent price from the marketplace. And so a few folks got together down in Point, Texas, and it expanded from there. All around sort of the cooperative movement, as well as starting to do advocacy on behalf of our nation's farmers, ranchers, and rural communities. We have about 250,000 members currently.
And who pays the way, Tom?
The farmers pay the way.
So your 250,000 members is where you get your operating capital then?
Yeah, we get about a third of our income from that, and a third from investments. Years ago, we owned an insurance company.
Okay.
And a mutual insurance company where farmers owned it, and they had sold that. We still get some use of name fee off of the products that are sold under that name, but it's primarily...
No big bucks from Exxon Corporation then, huh?
No, we don't, Michael.
Okay, good. Well, really quickly, who do you think should get the money, Tom?
Well, first of all, let me sort of clarify something about the money, Michael. You'd said it's $100 billion annually. That's right. The entire Farm Bill.
That's the entire Farm Bill.
And that includes food and nutrition programs, which
correct.
Are about 60% of that budget.
I think about $20 billion goes to farmers, right?
Actually, yes. Okay. On average, that's what the bill authorized. But over the last 5 years, we've been spending less than that. In fact, over that five-year period, the actual spending on farm programs has been $23 billion less than what they had predicted. So oftentimes we all get lumped together, but the Farm Bill is a very complex document that covers food,
just give us a real thumbnail about how much do you think that commodity agriculture should get?
Well, I don't think you can put a number out there, Michael. I think what all farmers, regardless of what type of production they have, what type of commodities, should have a basic safety net.
Okay.
When they're
already, Tom, we can see why you're the president.
Well, though, Michael, if you stop and think about it, in the issue of fairness, there's a lot of variables that food producers cannot control.
Okay.
You can't control the weather. You can't control the government action. And
right.
They really can't control their...
And that's why we have a farm bill, is to smooth things.
That's why we have a farm bill. But that farm bill has to be equitable for all producers.
Okay.
And that's going to be the challenge here. But, you know, the best farm policy we can have is one that addresses the causes of the challenges rural America faces.
Let me introduce the rest of our guests, and
okay.
We'll get back to all of these other things. Okay, hold on,
right.
And we'll be right back with you. Also with us today, we have Jonathan Landeck, who is the Deputy Executive Director of the Organic Farming Research Foundation. Jonathan, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning.
Hey, you were just fresh out of D.C. too, right?
Right.
Were you
right.
Amazed when you first saw the Department of Agriculture?
Yes. I happen to think it's as big as it is. I think it's a beautiful building.
It is a beautiful building,
ways.
Yeah.
It's really classic architecture for the period.
So now you're with the Organic Farming Research Foundation based in Santa Cruz, California. Tell us a little bit about OFRF.
Right. The Organic Farming Research Foundation, OFRF, was founded in 1990. This year will be 17 years old. Mm-hmm. It was founded by a group of California organic farmers with the idea that there wasn't much going on in the area of research on organic farming. And so the mission of OFRF is to improve and expand the adoption of organic farming practices by focusing on research.
And traditionally, who pays your way, by the way?
Right. We have fairly diverse source of support that includes foundation support. We are a nonprofit organization, public advocacy organization, mm-hmm. national in scope. So we receive about 40% from foundations, another 40% from the industry, organic industry, and then we receive individual contributions, including $25, $30 checks, including from farmers, from organic farmers.
So
very little government funding, like less than 1%.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. So not getting much money at all.
Right.
Well, and traditionally, I guess if you can think of organic agriculture in a traditional sense at all, it being so new and whatnot, you've not had much to do with government funding at all. Organic agriculture has really been way far away from receiving any kind of government funds.
Very much so. Very much so. Organic farmers are very free in that respect.
Okay, big question to you.
Mm-hmm.
Who should get the $20 billion a year that we're handing out?
Well, the farm community should receive those funds. And our perspective is that what's good for organic farmers is good for the entire agricultural community, all farmers.
So you will say, we want some too, right?
Well, we're not looking for subsidy payments. We're looking for research support.
Okay, good. Also with us today, we have Autumn Vizi, who is the legislative director for United Fresh. Welcome to the Food Chain, Autumn.
Thanks, Michael.
I understand you have a little cold, so we'll be really gentle with you today.
I do.
Okay. You're with United Fresh, and United Fresh is a very large industry organization, right?
Yes, we were founded in 1904, and we represent basically all sectors of the food chain as far as produce is concerned, from the grower all the way up to the retail level. So very diverse. Membership that we have and a very large group. So we're very looking forward to this year and the 2007 Farm Bill. So.
Okay. Autumn, not only do you have a cold, but your BlackBerry does too.
I know.
So let me ask you really quickly, Autumn. You represent your industry or your organization, United Fresh, is part of an organization called the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance.
Correct.
And you're working toward getting a piece of this farm bill for the specialty crop growers. What is a specialty crop grower?
What is a specialty crop grower? Well, the specialty crop growers are essentially, and I'm going to use the definition that's in the 2002 Farm Bill, but the fruit and vegetable, it includes fruit and vegetable growers, tree nut, and dried fruit and horticulture. So,
are you going to let the organic folks in on that too?
Well, and I don't, to be honest with you, I don't know if, I'm assuming that our organics are already just come under that definition, but I don't know that.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but who do you think should get the bucks, Autumn?
Well, again, I think that the Farm Bill is designed for the farm community, as well as, you know, what Jonathan was saying earlier. I feel like it should be an equitable bill. This is the only bill that that really affects agriculture. It's only written, you know, once every 5 years, and I think that it is called the Farm Bill, and therefore it should not just benefit, you know, a few growers. It should benefit all of
agriculture. Oh, it should benefit. Okay, good. Thank you very much, Autumn. We'll pick you up when we come back. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about your money, your real money, pretty close to $100 billion a year that we invest in agriculture. Who do you think should get the money? Should it be commodity agriculture, those who have traditionally received it, the corn, soybeans, wheat, cotton people? Or what about the specialty growers, lettuce and spinach? Or what about the organic folks? Do you think they should have some too? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Please do stay tuned. Hey, we're back. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson, your host for the hour. Today we're talking about real money, your money, billions of dollars of your money that every year we invest in the agriculture of our country. Every 5 years or so we get together and consider agriculture and consider the changing shape of agriculture and the changing shape of our world. And we try to figure out how best to invest our money so that our agriculture remains viable and in one piece and functioning so that you and I can eat. So we spend the big bucks every year, somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 billion. Roughly $20 billion of that goes directly to farmers and agriculture. And like I said, every 5 years we try to figure out how to divvy up the money so that it does the most good. Now, traditionally, we have been investing a lot of that money in the big commodity crops that we grow, the corn, the soybeans, wheat, the cotton, and those kinds of things. And over the years, we've looked at this situation and kind of scratch our head because it seems like those people who get that commodity money really have become quite big and quite powerful and quite rich on government money. And so we're kind of scratching our head and thinking, well, maybe there's other ways we should invest our money. And we're curious to hear what you have to think. Phone numbers today are 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We have with us Tom Bias, who's the president of the National Farmers Union. We also have with us Jonathan Landeck, who's the Deputy Executive Director of the Organic Farming Research Foundation. And somehow we have just lost Autumn Veazey, who is the Legislative Director of United Fresh. She was on a BlackBerry in Washington, D.C., and maybe some snow fell on her phone or something like that, but she's gone. Maybe she'll call back. So we were talking a little bit about who we think should get the money. Tom, let me start with you and ask you this real basic question. Why should we taxpayers be handing out over $100 billion a year, I guess, to get cheap food, right?
Well, it has been for cheap food. Of course, I don't think you can use that number, $100 billion, for cheap
food. That's the total amount of our farm bill.
And that's the total amount, okay. But 60% of that is actually food and nutrition programs, school lunch, women, infant, children programs.
Okay. So let me redefine it then.
Okay.
Let me go back to somewhere around in the neighborhood of $20 billion here.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Let's look at that $20 billion and what we actually get for it. Since the beginning of this nation, you know, our food production has helped our nation become secure. It continues to help our nation become secure. And $20 billion, while it's a lot of money to you and I, in the relative sense of a $3 trillion annual federal budget, it's a small fraction to pay in order to ensure we continue to have high-quality food and fiber that our nation's consumers have counted on since the beginning of this nation, and hopefully will in the future. Now, the question is, should we be spending it all in certain commodities? And the answer is no. We need to come up with a farm program that allows every farmer and rancher to get what they want more than anything, which is a price, a profitable price from the marketplace. And that should be the central focus of this farm bill. The last one's a good example. I mentioned earlier we saved federal taxpayers $23 billion over the course of that farm bill over what was projected to be spent when it was passed. That the reason for that is we made the farm programs, two-thirds of them, counter-cyclical, meaning farmers don't get assistance on when prices are higher, and they only get assistance when they really need it. If we would shift all of that into that counter-cyclical program, that $20 billion a year would drop down at least in half, if not two-thirds, just for this year alone, because we do have higher prices. That should be our goal.
Whatever happened to the notion of farmers or any businessman, you know, saving in times of surplus for to get by in times of tightness? I mean,
that's been one of the challenges we face in not only public policy, but you have to understand we're not like any other business where you can go out and adjust your production on a quarterly basis or monthly basis. You often have one time to plant the crop, one time to harvest the crop, and so all of your revenue for the year is based on that one crop in most places in the country. If you decide I'm just not going to plant because if I don't plant, prices will go up, well, you're not big enough to affect that supply and demand chain. And we're not just competing here in the United States, but we're competing in a global economy.
And that's something
if we don't produce, someone else will produce. And really, you know, that's part of the problem. Part of the reason we're not getting a decent price is because of trade agreements.
About 50% of our food, of the food consumed in the United States, now comes from outside of our borders. Let me pass that question on to Jonathan Landeck of the Organic Farming Research Foundation. Jonathan, why do you think we should have we consumers should subsidize agriculture the way we do, or should we?
Well, the question is, should we? Yes. Well, first of all, food is something that's near and dear to all of us. So we have 100%
very
coverage.
Near and dear to me.
we might think about calling the farm bill the food and farm bill, if not the food bill. But in any case, we all have a vested interest in how we spend that money.
Mm-hmm.
From the organic community perspective, the organic farming community perspective, we're hoping for the all of us, the government, that's us, to pay for information. Information on how to better farm, information on where to market our crops.
So you're not looking for subsidies at all?
No, we're looking for research and information about prices, marketing.
And you think the consumer should be helping fund that?
Well, I think it's also important from certainly a household security perspective, and if not a national security perspective, for to have a healthy and reliable source of food within in the United States itself.
So, Autumn Veazey from the United Fresh, do you think that we should be subsidizing agriculture the way we've been doing?
Well, I agree with Jonathan. Our industry, we have you know, some very tough issues as far as invasive pests and disease issues, trade. You've already touched on the fact that we are importing now 50% of our food into this country.
Right.
So we do need some support. We're not asking, our industry is not asking for subsidies, direct payments per se. It just doesn't, we recognize that does not work for our industry.
But you think we should be subsidizing? You think that we consumers should be spending this money? We should be making this investment?
Yes, I do.
You think we're going to get our money's worth?
Well, I think that, you know, it is very important that we have safe food in this country and abundant food in this country and quality food. And if that, you know, it takes government support to do that, then yes, I believe that, you know, subsidies are the right thing. Now, not for every single, you know, industry, not every single commodity, but for those that especially trying to lower the cost of food. I think subsidies do help that. Consumers don't want to go out and have to pay, 50% of their income check just to buy food, or 60-70% of their income just to buy food. So,
okay, when we get back, we're going to continue with this. Folks, we're curious to know what you think, how you think we should spend our money. Every year we're investing $100 billion. Part of that, $20 billion or so, goes right to farmers. The rest goes into food and nutrition programs. And we're curious to know what you think we should spend the money on and who should get the money. Do you think it should go to the conventional producers of commodity crops, the corn, soybeans, wheat, cotton, or should it go to the specialty growers, people growing rutabagas, I guess, corn or spinach and lettuce and things like that? Or what about the organic people who have a special way of growing things directly for us? Where do you think we should put the bucks? They're your bucks, and they're a lot of your bucks. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. I've got all my buttons punched up, and we're flying high with the big question of the day, which is, where do you think we should put our food money, our lunch money? That's a big chunk of money, too, real money. Every year, about $100 billion we invest in our food and nutrition programs and our agriculture. Somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 billion of those dollars go right smack dab to those who grow our food, the farmers and the agricultural community. And which of those farmers do you think that you and I should be investing our money in? Should we go with the conventional commodity crops that we've always invested in, the corn, the soybeans, the wheat, the cotton? Or should we take some of that money and invest in specialty crops, those who are producing our lettuce and our spinach and our carrots and our roses and those kinds of things? And or how about the organic community? Should they get a chunk as well? Now, as I understand it, the folks here that are representing the specialty community, Autumn Vesey and Jonathan Landeck, are saying that they don't want subsidies. Is that true, Jonathan?
Well, in the classic sense, I suppose if you say that we're using government funding, we are subsidizing. Mm-hmm. But the organic community, as I said before, is really interested in information and garnered through research, whether that's economic research, marketing research, production research. So, yes, it would be public funding paying for things that the private sector would not in the area of research to obtain information. So, but we're not talking about the classic subsidy as we know it, deficiency payments and the like for the organic farming community.
Okay, good. Tom Bias brought up this notion of competing with other lands, and as we stand here today, almost 50% of the food consumed here in the United States is coming from somewhere else in the world. Autumn Vesey, when we were talking about pulling the show together, you talked about how difficult it is. It's becoming for specialty crop growers to compete here in the United States because of foreign competition. Do you think if the specialty crop industry were to get some of this government largesse, that you would be better able to compete with the growers of China and Mexico and elsewhere in the world?
Well, we certainly do. And it's important to note as well that the 2005 dietary guidelines call for 5 to 13 servings of fruit and vegetables a day. And many of our consumers, the public, the American public, are not getting those servings. And we feel like our ag policy, the farm bill, should be more aligned closely to achieve that goal. So in doing so as well, providing funding for giving us the tools that we need to compete against the global market as well.
Mm-hmm. What percentage of the American food dollar goes to specialty crops?
Right, I don't know the exact percentage, but I know that it is very little. I mean, we are nearly 50% of the farm gate crop value in this country, and nowhere near that amount of the Farm Bill funding, you know, goes to the specialty crop industry. So I would say little less than 10%.
And you think it should be raised?
We do, but I can't give you, you know, and again, wouldn't want to give a number. We just believe that the Farm Bill should be more equitable.
Then you should be president, too, if you're afraid of like Tom Bias. We're gonna go to Tom right now and see if we can get him to respond to that notion. Tom, Autumn was talking about how specialty crops are a huge percentage of our food dollar, and yet get such a small percentage of the food bill or the farm bill dollar. Do you think that should be changed to make it more equitable to reflect the actual percentage?
I think the whole farm bill needs to be equitable, and I think we need to all look at everything. And, you know, we get into this, should we have X amount of dollars for this commodity or that commodity? That's sort of symptomatic, in my opinion.
But isn't that what we have to do? Isn't that what...
No, it's not what we have to do. I think what we need to do is look at the problems faced by all the different types of commodities and producers around the country,
mm-hmm.
and come up with a mechanism so we can do what they all want to do and what everyone wants to do and what's the best thing for the taxpayer and the consumer.
Well, how do you do that?
Well, you have to look at the policies, and you can't just look at something and say, all right, we're going to throw $10 over here and $1,000 into this area. We have to look at a coordinated policy. And you were talking about all the food imports are coming into this country. And I really think that's an issue that we have to look at, because trade and our trade agreements come into that. And, Michael, as long as our free trade agenda continues to go down that road to allow other countries to produce their food with cheap labor, forced labor, with environmental and health and safety standards that are below what our U.S. producers have to comply with, then we're not going to get that fair price from the marketplace. That's something that has to be addressed. The second thing that you have to look at is what is federal assistance? What's a subsidy? All right, a corn farmer gets a deficiency payment. A fruit or vegetable producer does not. But do they get assistance elsewhere? And is that assistance elsewhere equal to or maybe even better than that? You know, there's a lot of commodities that have marketing orders that have worked well until the trade agreements have kind of undone a lot of the impact of that. There's a lot of different mechanisms that can be used. But if we go into this as just, I've got to have $10 billion for corn and you got to have $4 million for wheat, then we're going to have a food fight and a disjointed farm bill that really doesn't mm-hmm. achieve the goals. It's just passing out the money.
Isn't that, Tom, though, what those senators and those congressmen must do?
It's not what they must do, Michael, and I think that's how you end up with bad farm policy and food policy. But, you know,
They come up with the budget numbers if they don't do that, Tom?
They have to do projections. And those budget numbers are as accurate as me trying to throw a dart from Washington, D.C. and land it on your car in your parking lot. There's so many variables that go out into that.
Mm-hmm.
And in farming that it's tough to project from one year to the other. The 2002 Farm Bill projected we'd spend a lot more than we spent, and because we had higher prices, we've spent a lot less. That could easily have gone the other way.
And ethanol had a big part in that, didn't it?
Ethanol and renewable energy, and not just renewable energy from corn, but oil seeds and biomass and cellulosic ethanol in the future is really the most exciting thing of the row crop commodities, and other things like switchgrass in the future and wood and wheat straw and rice straw and things like that. On the food side, and I think your other two guests would attest to this, the hottest single most exciting thing in the food industry is buying fresh, buying local, organic, natural products. It's consumer-driven. We've got to figure out a way in order to make that continue. But we have to watch out for organics from China or not organics from California.
Amen.
And
We're going to take a quick break, Tom, and pick that up when we come back. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about the big bucks that you're spending on the farm bill, some $100 billion a year, $20 billion of which goes right to farmers. Where do you think the money should go? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Do stay tuned. Okay, folks, you've got a budget, $20 billion a year to spend, and you want to spend it on agriculture. So where are you going to put the money to get the most? And what you're really looking for is investing in our future. When you put down this $20 billion, you've got to have a place to take it, because it is our future. It is the future of our children. So where are you going to spend it? $20 billion a year. So we're going to ask our guest today that very question. We're going to start with Tom Bias here. Tom, are you there?
Yes, sir.
You got $20 billion a year to spend. Where are you going to spend it on our agriculture?
We're going to spend it where we can move the marketplace to be profitable. I think you're going to see a lot in this farm bill on renewable energy. I think you'll also...
So we're going to spend it on cellulosic ethanol? Yay, I'm for it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
The Congress is very committed to moving forward. We've had these wake-up calls for 30 years on energy, and I don't think they're going to backslide this time, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it'll take us a few years to get to cellulosic ethanol and biomass and wind energy and all the renewables, but we can get there if we make that commitment.
And if we do get it there, how will it change the heartland of our country?
Well, I think it's going to change some cropping practices in the short term. I think as you get into cellulosic ethanol, most plants have sugar in them, and if you can figure out an economical and efficient way to extract that sugar and then manufacture that or distill that into alcohol, you'll see then another shift in cropping practices. So it'll be a sort of a hold-on, exciting moment in agriculture,
and it would
because
be kind
everybody
of like
won't be growing corn or everybody won't be growing beans. Or
right.
Pardon me?
It would be kind of like the rebirth of our heartland, wouldn't it?
It would be the rebirth. And, Michael, I've been all around this country several times since I got elected president of the Farmers Union, and I have never seen the optimism and excitement, and it's primarily over the renewable energy. And the second component in this farm bill, and I think you'll see a big emphasis, is on buying fresh, buying local foods, where farmers can actually walk in there and price their products on quality. Mm-hmm. And the third component is going to be conservation. You know, farmers and ranchers and all the rural communities want to do the right thing. Sometimes it's an economic decision on whether or not they can, and I think you'll see a lot of incentives for conservation efforts.
Okay. Jonathan Lindeck, Deputy Director, Organic Farming Research Foundation. You got $20 billion a year. Where are you going to spend it?
From the organic farming community perspective, $20 billion, we'll give back $19 billion right away. We'd die and go to heaven with that amount of money. We're looking for...
I agree with that.
We're looking for, at most, in our entire platform, if we add up all the numbers, maybe like $500 million.
Wow. You're cheap.
It's important to record. Well, inexpensive, not cheap.
Okay.
But actually, organic, you know, we have an incredible consumer demand in this country for organic products. And the truth is that we do not have the production capacity and the acreage right now to meet that demand. And so that in itself is cause for worry. Plus, there's issues. Organic food, with the price, that's putting money in farmers' pockets. But even if you're not farming organically and want to transition, there's a risk involved. So that if we want to meet the demand in this country and not rely on imports from China, Mexico, Argentina, and the like, then we need to make that what is a relatively modest investment in a fair share for organic farming community.
Autumn Veazey, United Fresh, and your alliance of specialty farmers around the country have $20 billion to spend. Autumn, where are you going to spend it?
Well, and I'm going along with Jonathan's theme here. I would take two out of that $20 billion. I would give the $18 billion back to the taxpayers. We feel like $2 billion would be a tremendous amount of money for our industry. And, again, just helping our industry, strengthen the competitiveness of our industry, and as I've stressed before, enhancing the policies that involve tackling invasive pests and disease issues, trade issues, research, various things like that would be very helpful for our industry.
And you'd settle for $2 billion?
We would, $2 billion, yeah, a year.
A year, okay.
So that would be $10 billion over five.
Right,
okay, there you are.
So you would take half of it then.
Okay, Tom, Jonathan here wants $1 billion. Autumn wants $2 billion. That leaves you $17 billion. You happy camper?
Well, no. Farmers Union is a general commodity organization, so we have producers, we have organic producers, right. We have fresh vegetable producers, we have corn producers, we have cattle, we have it all. And that's why we don't want to see a food fight and everyone just kind of saying, all right, this is what I have to have, let's move forward. Let's all work together and do what's right. And you know what, Michael? If we write these farm programs in a counter-cyclical nature and we move the price of the markets up, which we can do. Corn is a perfect example. Corn, soybeans, and wheat will pay out no counter-cyclical payments this year. The only payment they will pay is this direct decoupled approach, which is ironically what the secretary wants to move more towards, is paying people regardless of what happens on the farm. That's a bad policy. If we stay away from that and move the market, you know, we'll have plenty of billions left for the taxpayers.
Okay, here's a quick question before we go to the break. I want each of you to think about. On the screen here, it says, let's all work together against China. Can we use our $20 billion a year to save our agriculture from international competition? Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, we're back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're wrapping up the show. We're talking about the Farm Bill and the big bucks, your big bucks, that are being invested in agriculture. Folks, right now as we speak, almost one half of the food we consume here in the United States comes from outside our borders. On the screen here at The Food Chain, the screen says, let's all work together against China. And so we scratch our head and ask, can the money that we invest in these farm bills be used to make us more competitive in the world, in the new world order of open borders? Or will it instead be used to hold up old ways of doing things and ossified agriculture, if you will? And so that's the question we'll end with here today, and we got a few minutes left. So let's start with you. Tom Bias, president of the National Farmers Union, is this money going to do us good, or are we going to be spending it on holding up things that have worked in the past but don't have a hope in the future?
No, I'm optimistic that the money can be put to good use to not only make us competitive, but to allow for an opportunity. And that's good for consumers, it's good for farmers, it's good for the rural communities. However, on the China issue, that's a trade component. And we have to, focus our efforts on the trade agreements, and fast-track trade promotion authority is up for reauthorization this year, and it's absolutely imperative that we insist that future trade agreements address labor and environmental standards, or we will not be competitive with the Chinas, the Brazils, the Indias of the world. Okay. That's critical.
Okay, thank you very much, Tom Bias. Autumn Vesey, United Fresh. Is this money going to do good, or is it going to be used to hold up an ossified way of doing things?
Yes, Michael, I think that this money will certainly be put to good use, and I agree with Tom in that we must make sure that these trade agreements address the concerns as they relate to agriculture. I know in the 2002, the current bill, we have there are a couple of programs that specifically help our market. And helping, you know, tackle some of those non-tariff trade barriers, as we like to say, with other countries like China. So we've made some progress, and we expect that the $20 billion or the new funding will also, you know, help us even further.
Thank you very much, Autumn. Jonathan Landeck?
Yes. Well, in this country, we have a history of working together and creativity, and I think we all need to realize that maybe China is a metaphor for all those outside pressures on the farm community in this country. But about 20% of all jobs in this country are somehow related to agriculture, and we need to keep those rural communities and urban farming communities viable. And I think we'll find a way to be creative this time around and meet the challenges of this new world we're in.
Or
we'll see more jobs lost in the rural communities in particular. And so from a security perspective, we need to work together on getting it right this time around.
Hope for the future?
Very much so. Very optimistic.
Tom Bias, hope for the future?
Absolutely.
We're going to make it?
We're going to make it.
Autumn Vesey?
That's right. We're going to make it, like we are.
Okay, folks.
Very optimistic.
Okay, folks, what do you think? Do you think we're going to make it, and how are you going to spend your money to make it? You can, if you didn't get a chance to log on your comments today on the food chain, you can always do so on the forum page at metrofarm.com. But a big question, and we do so want to thank our guests for joining us today, Tom Bias, Autumn Vesey, Jonathan Landeck, and especially you out there. We always appreciate your tuning in the food chain. Now stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio, and always remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.